Again, we want to take this opportunity to welcome those that are visiting in the audience. We know that you know, happy that you're here. Hope that we can say some things that will be an encouragement to you. And if you have any questions about it, has already been stated by Brother Pinkston. If you have any questions concerning about anything I'm about to say, I'd be more than happy to sit down with an open Bible and an open mind and give you a thus saith the Lord for the things that will be taught and said here this morning. It's our hope and our prayer to stay within the pages of God's holy word. To do any more or less than that would not be proper for you, nor would it be acceptable to the God that we serve. So we ask you to keep your mind and your Bible open as we study together. I also want to, on your way out this morning, I got an envelope yesterday in the mail from Ireland. And in that were a number of, somebody went to a lot of trouble to make a lot of bookmarks. They're small bookmarks, not like the big ones. It has the steps of salvation on it. And so if you would like any of those, I'll give you some of those as you go out today. She sent me maybe, I think, 100. And so if they're laminated, they'll be very good bookmarkers, something that you could have close to you if you ever need it. So if you want some of those, see me today as you go out. One other thing, the list that I gave you a month ago about the volunteers for the duties that we have to perform here, I would like, if you would still have them, to bring them by next Sunday. I'm going to start working on the list for 2017 sometime next month. So if you would like that, please make sure you get those lists to me. A number of months ago, I began looking at the subject of evidences. And we've been dealing with various aspects of evidences that God has given us in order that we might understand and know Him, and that we might not only know Him, but that we would believe Him, and more than that we would obey Him. And the evidence of God, we've looked at many different aspects of this. We've looked at the existence of God. We looked at the inspiration of the Bible. We looked at the unity and diversity that's in the Bible, even though it was written by a number of men over a period of years, and yet it has a uniform theme, and there's no contradiction, and it's a book of complete harmony and unity. Today, I want to talk about something that is, unfortunately, in our country today, it has become a political issue. But it is not a political issue. It is something that God has legislated from the beginning of time. And it is something that is determined by God and not by men. Today, we are told that morals are not relative. And what that simply means is we don't all have to have the same moral values. We don't have to have the same moral character. And we don't need to agree upon what morality is. And so morals are not relative. But I want to suggest to you this morning that morals are relative. And who determines morals? Who determines what morality is? Is it God or is it men? Is it society? Is it something that evolves over time as our thinking and attitudes change? Do our morals change? And does that really matter in the big scheme of things? It doesn't really matter what one considers moral over what another person considers moral. The establishment today and the political climate would tell you that we have to change the way that we have viewed these things for not just years, but for centuries. And we must change the way that we think. And we must change the way that we perceive things. And that the world is changing, and if we're going to fit in, then we're going to have to change along with it. Well, is that what God's Word teaches? And that's what I want to talk to you about today. Who determines this subject? God or men? And to use as our text, we want to use Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 23. This is a scripture that you should be very familiar with. It comes from a prophet of God who was sent to Judah to warn them of impending doom because she was taking the same steps that her sister nation Israel had taken when God destroyed them 100 years before in Assyrian captivity. And she did not learn the lessons from Israel. And she was following the same precarious steps, going down the same path, and it was going to doom her if she did not turn and change and amend her ways. Now, Jeremiah is an interesting book. When you study the first few chapters of the book of Jeremiah, he's preaching a message of hope. He's preaching a message that they need to repent, turn to God, and he will relent. But as we get further into the book of Jeremiah, he begins around chapter 20, maybe 18, he begins to change the message, and he tells them that they must conform and they must accept the punishment that is coming. God is going to place them in captivity. And they're going into captivity for the evil that they had done. And if they want to live, if they want to survive, then they must accept the punishment and they must accept the captivity. And even in the book of Jeremiah, he limits that this captivity by prophecy is only going to be for a period of 70 years. And then God is going to bring the remnant out and allow them to go back to their home and allow them to rebuild and allow them to go back to that which God had given them, but on a very, very small scale than what they had before they disobeyed him. And in the middle of this discussion, Jeremiah makes this statement. It says, O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not a man who walks to direct his own steps. God, not man, sets the standards of what's right and what's wrong, about what is relative and what is not relative. And we are not capable or qualified to make those decisions ourselves. Now, it is true. It is a very true thing that we are free moral agents. And we can choose to do and to think anything that we want to do or think. We have the right to do that. But when it comes to the right or wrong of our actions or our thinking, that has already been done and determined by the God who created us, by the God who created the world, and by the God that we serve. And so we were not left with the ability, nor with the responsibility or the accountability to set the standard. Now, why do you think God did that? Well, I know why God did that. Because man's fickle. He doesn't remain constant. He's ever-changing. And you know what? If you've been on this earth for any length of time, you know that man's thinking has changed on a lot of things. There's things that men are promoting today that 40 years ago, they wouldn't even have talked about in public. They wouldn't even discussed it. But yet now, it's become something that they're not ashamed of. That they are reckoning that maybe they were wrong 40 years ago. And their mind is changing and it's evolving. And what they would tell you is that they're getting smarter. Well, I would take issue with that. I don't think they're getting smarter. In many ways, I think they're becoming very much more ignorant in understanding why God made this statement. Why it's not a man who walks to direct his steps. When men determine the moral of society, they rationalize, they justify, they enable people, they accommodate different ways of thinking, and they excuse sin. And how do they do all that? They just redefine things. They just give them new names, give them new meaning, and give you a new perspective. And so when men determine morals, they're never going to be constant. They're ever going to be changing. Why? Because society changes. Mankind changes. Their world changes. Their understanding changes. And so you're always going to be left at the whim of whatever the thinking of the day is. That's why God did not leave it for men to determine the morals of society. In Isaiah 5 and verse 20, Brother Pinkston mentioned this passage this morning. And it is a very good passage because it is a commentary on the world that we live in. And it is a commentary on how the society thinks today. In Isaiah 5, verse 20, Isaiah the prophet wrote, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light, light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter." You see, what Isaiah was saying is that man is selfish. He's self-deceptive. He reverses right and wrong. He turns it on his head. He reverses it, completely turning it upside down. If you don't believe that, ladies and gentlemen, take a good look at how things have changed even in our own lifetime. Let me give you an example. 50 years ago, if you would have told my parents that the day would come when we could not determine what sex we were, but determine on how we felt on a given day, my parents would have taken me to a doctor, to a psychiatrist, to have me looked at. They would have thought that I'd lost my mind. But no, I haven't lost my mind, because that's the day that we are living in. And so today we're told in the transgender understanding that it just depends on how you feel about yourself. If you feel like a woman, go into the women's restroom. If you feel like a man on a given day and you're a woman, but you're feeling masculine that day, go into a men's restroom. Because it just is relative. It's just how you feel. Now, if I had told you this in 1950, you would have thought I lost my mind. You'd have thought I was some kind of kook. And maybe I still am. But that's how we think today. But you see, we could justify this if men set the standards. If we set the standard, then we can change the norm. And you want to know something, ladies and gentlemen? That's exactly what this nation is trying to do. It's trying to change the norm and to be more in line with the liberal thinking of our day. This is not a Democrat issue. This is not a Republican issue. This is an issue that deals with who determines the right or wrong on any moral subject. Is it man or is it God? And I want to warn you about something. When you begin to go down this road, when you begin to change the meaning of things, let me ask you an honest question. Where does it end? What's off limits? Let me give you something to think about. There was a time when fornication was frowned upon. I had a good friend of mine who preached in Indianapolis. And they were going to write a new curriculum for sex education for the high school class that was coming in. And this was in the early 70s. And it's when the states got the wise brainstorm that we needed to begin to teach our children about sexual education. So they were having a meeting where they were getting together with the parents, and they were bringing parents together to get ideals of what they think should be in the curriculum. So he went to this meeting. And one of the things, he raised his hand, he says, one of the things that we must have in this curriculum, we must have a section that teaches abstinence, that teaches that men and women need to wait until they are married. You know what? They laughed him to scorn. And you know what a young lady and what one of the older ladies said? "Mr. Smith, you need to get with the thinking of the 20th century. What you're talking about is going back to archaic and to things that are no longer are relative." This was in 1970. Now, brethren, that's the problem you're going to have when you begin to let men determine something that God did not leave in their realm to determine. When men determine morals, there's an evolution that denies a God in the Bible and leaves man himself as the highest standard. You see, when men determine the right or wrong of anything, then we have this evolution that we weren't really created. We evolved. And really, the Bible and God, they're really not real. Those are just crutches that people who are weak lean upon. I've been told that. I've been told in my faith, anybody that believes the Bible, you're a weak person. If you believe there's a God, it's because you're weak and you need something to lean on. Well, I deny that. But that's the way that people think about us. And the extraterrestrialism is each person experiences truth in his own way. There's no absolute. Existentialism just means that truth is what you experience. It's what you feel at the given moment, at the given place in your life, in what's happening in your spirit things, and what's going on in your world. And by your experiences, you determine what truth is for you. And you know what? The truth for you may not be what it is for me. And it may not be for your neighbor. And it may not even be for your children. Whatever truth is what we feel it is at any given moment. And the reason is that there are no absolutes. Now, I'm going to tell you what, brethren, that thinking is alive today. That thinking and that concept is very much practiced in our society today. And then you have situation ethics. Morals, right and wrong, are relative and situational. They're not absolute. It depends on the situation. You know what? Homosexuality might be wrong over here, but under this circumstance, it's okay. And you know what? It might be wrong to lie here, but it might be exceptional because of this circumstance over here. And we can determine the situation, determines whether we do the right thing or the wrong thing. Well, there's really no absolutes, so we just determine by the situation. Is that the way it works? Situation ethics has a lot of things in society that we're just going to do it by what the situation is at a given moment. These are all things. Evolution, existentialism, and situation ethics are the thinking of men who believe that they determine morals and not God. This is how they justify. This is how they enable people. This is how they accommodate different thinking. This is how they rationalize their behavior. And you want to know the bottom line of all of it? This is how they excuse sin. This is their reasoning why it is not sin. You see, sin is in the eye of the beholder. What you might think sin is not my definition of sin. You might think this is sin, and that's sin for you. But I might think this is acceptable behavior, so it's not sin for me. So I can't judge you, and you can't judge me. So isn't that nice? That sounds good, doesn't it? We don't have any problem. We'll all get along. We won't have to look down on anyone. We won't have to call out anyone, and we can just be one big happy family. It doesn't work. It doesn't work because it will ever change. Because man is fickle. He does not remain the same. Now, there are popular slogans in our day that preach and want things to be relative for situational morality. And so they want to regulate situational morality. Well, each man's conscience is the same God. Think about this now. If it doesn't bother your conscience, who am I to judge your conscience? You just do whatever you feel is right. Man is free to do his own thing. And you know what? There's a truth in that. Man is free to do his own thing. He can think and do whatever he wants to do. God gives him that right. I wouldn't argue that point. That's true. Whether it's right or wrong, that's a different discussion. If it feels right, do it. Now, yeah, you think about this for a minute. I want you to think this stuff through for a minute. No one can legislate morality. Now listen to what they're saying. You can't say this is wrong. You can't say this is right. You can't legislate that. You know what? You're right. I can't. You can't. But God can. And God does. fornication, adultery, homosexuality are optional lifestyle choices. They are not moral issues. Now, let me take you through what's happening in the time that I've been on this earth. There was a time when most religions, for the most part, they openly opposed and taught against premarital sex or fornication. They taught that that was sinful and it should not be done. There was a time when men looked down upon men or women who committed adultery, who had relations with people other than their spouse. You know what? Let me give you a perfect example of how things change. And I don't know if you remember, this was some years ago, I believe in the 1980s. It might have been in the late 70s. There was a man who ran for office. I forget his name now, but he was running for the President of the United States, and somebody caught him on, had a picture of him on a boat with a woman that was not his wife, and the name of the boat on it was Monkey Business. You know, that sunk his campaign. He never got out of the primaries. That sunk him. Move it forward 30 years to Bill Clinton. It didn't matter when Bill Clinton ran for office. About all his extramarital affairs, it didn't matter. You see, it didn't matter then because it was acceptable. It was acceptable behavior. Can you remember the time that when you turned on your TV, you never had to worry about seeing things that you had to hide from your children? You never had to worry about words that you would never hear on TV. Do you remember those times? I remember those times. I remember when I was 10 and I was sick from school and I lived outside the Chicago area, and in Chicago they had a show that was on every day for noon for 25 years called Bozo the Clown. And it was on every day. And one of the things they did in Bozo the Clown, it was live TV. It was done live. It wasn't taped, it was done live. And one of the things they had a thing called the grand prize game. And it was a game that had six little, what I would call, what we would call sand pails. And they were lined up 1 to 6. And a little boy or girl would stand behind the line. And he would throw ping pong balls into each one. And as he went through the line, the prizes got bigger. And then they began to have a big drum that they would pull out a name from people that would send in, people like me, that would send in and hope they'd draw my name. And whatever prize that child won, I'd win. And so if you got to chapter 6 every day, they put a silver dollar in bucket 6. And if you won bucket 6, you got all the silver dollars in there and a new swim bike. Hey, that's a big deal when you're 10 years old. So one day, I'm sick and I'm home and I'm watching this. And this little boy, he may have been about 9, he was playing and he got 1 through 5. And when they get to 6, they light up all of the pails and they start the drum roll, and he throws 6 and it goes around and around on the lip and it falls off. And he says, "Oh, blank." TV goes, pfft. And Bozo puts his hand over his mouth and says, "Oh, that's a Bozo no-no." And the kid says, "Cram it, Clowny." His parents are sitting in the front row and they come and get him and take him out. Today, everybody would laugh at that. They wouldn't even cause anybody to think anything, would it? You see, do you know today, 50% of all modern day sitcoms show homosexuality, adultery, fornication in a favorable, positive light? You know what some of our best TV shows are today? Good Housewives. You know what that's about? That's nothing but about men and women committing adultery over and over with different people. The Simpsons. That taught that it's okay to be belligerent to your parents. It's okay to use vulgarity. It's okay to use innuendo. That it's okay. And it's funny. The Modern Family. That's the new number one show on CBS. You know what it's about? It's about a lesbian, a homosexual, and a man that is a womanizer that live together in the same home. That's modern. That's the Modern Family. What's going on, folks? We're being desensitized. They're telling us that that's normal behavior. I was talking with a fellow a number of years ago, and I was bragging that we had a person in the congregation of a friend of mine who had just celebrated their 70th year of being married. And this guy was ridiculing that. He goes, how could a man put up with a woman for 70 years? The same woman. I couldn't do that. I need some variety. Everybody thinks that's funny. But you see, brethren, that's the problem. The problem is we're re-identifying and we're redistributing and we're determining what really is right. Now, I want you to think with me for a minute here. There was a time when fornication was frowned upon. It is not anymore. There was a time adultery was frowned on. It is not anymore. There was a time when homosexuality was frowned upon. It is not anymore. What's the next step? Pedophiles. Oh, that'll never happen. What? What if somebody begins to tell you that's what feels right to him? That feels right to her. To have relations with a child, that feels like it's normal to them. What are you going to say? How are you going to say it's wrong? You say, Mr. Grid, that ain't never going to happen. You don't think so? That's where we're going. What's the next step? Would you accept that because somebody else did it, one of it was your child, that they wanted to be with? Would that be okay? You say, well, it can't happen. Yes, it can happen when you let men determine what's moral and what's not moral. That is the next thing that's going to fall in line. And you want to know something? We have a religion that promotes it. One of the major, largest religions in our country has this problem within its own religious organization, and how they deal with it is they just move the individual instead of ever prosecuting them. If you or I did that, we'd be in jail. You see, brethren, it just determines who is calling what's right and what's wrong. Popular slogans, women should be free to choose abortion. Remember one of the big issues in our last election was full-term abortion. The Democratic president nominee was for full-term abortion. Now think about that. 12 weeks. That's a person. At 16 weeks, they're 4 or 5 inches long. But do you know what? You can abort a child in the 8th month in many of our states. 8 months. I got friends who were born in the 8th month. And explain this to me. How is it if you get an automobile and you drive and you're intoxicated and you hit a vehicle and you kill the occupant and the occupant is carrying a child, that you get charged with two cases of murder, but this is okay. Show me the rationale in that. Society says if you kill a pregnant lady, that you can be charged with not one case of murder, but two. But if you abort it, even up to 8 months, then that's okay. Since Roe v. Wade became the law of our nation in 1973, we have aborted in our nation over 1 billion children. You let that number sink in. 1 billion children. You think we got any blood on our hands? But in the political arena, they say it's a right for a woman to choose. Who chooses for the unborn? Who speaks for the unborn? I'll tell you who speaks for him. God does. God said that's murder. No matter how you slice it and dice it, no matter how you want to come it out, that's murder. But you know what? I'm the one who's looked at as being out of step. I am. And you know the day's coming when if I preach about this, if I preach about homosexuality, or I preach about adultery, that they're going to put me in jail. I never thought I'd live to see it, but I might. Who determines what's right and what's wrong? God or men? Oh, by the way, before I leave that subject for a minute, whenever this subject is discussed in the political realm, they bring up incense. I did a little research into that. You know that the number of abortions that are done, less than 0.5% are done for the reason of incense. Less than 1% of all abortions are done for the reason of incense. And if you add the life of the mother, it goes up to 1.5%. So what does that mean? 99% of abortions are done because they are unwanted pregnancy and they're a burden on somebody's lifestyle. Don't let them throw figures at you like that makes things right. You know what that is? That's situation ethics. Incest, put the child up for adoption. Why should the child die for the sin of another person? I don't understand. Who determines morals, God or men? Joseph Fletcher versus God or morality. We're going to talk about that. Fallacies of man setting his own standards. And situation ethics produces no ethics. I want to tell you, brethren, when you go down this road of situation ethics, there are no ethics. It's changing. It's going to change as society changes, ethics are going to change. God, not man, must determine what's moral. Joseph Fletcher, he's an interesting person. Joseph Fletcher versus God or morality. Situation ethics replaces Bible morality. Joseph Fletcher, in a book that he wrote, he lived from 1901 to 1991, he wrote a book called Situation Ethics and New Morality. He was an Episcopalian priest, that then became an ethics professor, and then he became an atheist. Boy, that's really going through it, isn't it? He went from a priest to a ethics professor, and now he's an atheist. And when he was an atheist, he wrote this book called Situation Ethics and New Morality. Abortion, infanticide, euthanasia, let the state kill defective children. Euthanasia, kill people with low life quality. Eugenics, improve humanity's gene pool. What's he talking about? Well, you see, abortion and infanticide, you're just getting rid of defective children. You just determine the ones that are defective. Well, there will not be any Down syndrome children. There would not be any child born with any medical faculties being impaired. Well, you just get rid of them. You just clean them out. And euthanasia, people taking up space. Now, brother, remember Dr. Jack Kevorkian? Remember him? Remember him? He was a doctor in Detroit, and he was giving people the option of dying with dignity because they had these incurable diseases, and if they wanted to kill himself, then he would give them the medicine or the drugs that needed to do it so they could die and they wouldn't have the pain. And remember, they took him to court and put him in jail. Euthanasia, you know what that means? That just means we kill all people with low life quality. If you get old and you have cancer, why go through all the chemo? Why try to keep yourself alive? You're not going to live very long. Just go ahead and put you to death, and you're just taking up space. Now, you don't believe our country would ever do that, do you? Better think again. You see, when you go down this road of situation ethics, this is what's coming. Here's a man that wrote about it. He wrote it and he promoted it. That it's a way to take care of the population problem. And it improves the humanity's gene pool. We'll get better people. We get rid of all the defects, then we'll have a better gene pool. Love. Love guides moral decisions. In the concentration camps in Germany during World War II, the German POW camp guards committed adultery with guards, and then they would allow the pregnant women to be released. Is this true love for God, husband, and the guard, the child conceived, and the other POWs? So if a woman wanted to be spared in the concentration camp, she would submit to sleeping with the guards, and when she became pregnant, then they would let her live. Would that be okay? Would that not be sin because of the circumstance? Why? We just call it love, just in a different way. Love guides moral decision. Germans jailed her in love of humanity. But what they didn't tell her is they were using it for genetic engineering. Hitler was consumed with making a master race. And he tried all types of genetic experiments in order to produce the master race. And the ones that were used as guinea pigs were men and women who were nothing more than a guinea pig in order to prove and to extract what he wanted. And what he wanted was a master race. You know, we have people today that said the Holocaust really, it didn't really happen. Really? I guess they'd never been to Austria. Never saw the crematoriums. Never talked to survivors who got numbers forever on their arm when they were in concentration camps. I guess that's all a figment of my imagination. But before you get way down off Hitler, and about how ludicrous and how crazy he was, if you do a little research about Hitler, he's a pretty brilliant man. But he allowed evil to consume him. But you know what? We have men and women today that are going right down this same road with making a master race, with situation determining the right or wrong of any given action in a given time. When I was in Ohio, they created a wing of the Air Force Museum. It was dedicated to the Holocaust. And I went through that, and when I walked through it and I got to the other end, I was crying because I could not believe that one human being could do that to another human being. and it would not violate their conscience. But ladies and gentlemen, when you erase the absolute right or wrong of any given action, there is no end to what a mind can come up with to do and call it right and call it honorable behavior. That's the danger when you release absolutes. There is no stopping point. Everything is relative. Everything can be rationalized. It can be justified. It can accommodate different ways of thinking. In Romans 3, verse 8, God denies false love, and he denies the ends justify the means. And why not say, let us do evil that good may come? As we have slanderously reported, as some affirm that we say, their condemnation is just. Now, ladies and gentlemen, euthanasia, we'll just get rid of the, we'll get rid of the excess. In abortion, we'll get rid of the defective. That's exactly what this kind of thinking is. Can we do evil that good may come? We'll have less of a population problem. We won't have these people having to have this care for the rest of their life. We'll get rid of all of that. And we'll do this evil that good may come. That's the rationale behind it. Where do you end it? What becomes off limits? What becomes off limits? Let me conclude this morning that God's morality is not situated in ethics. And I'm going to use as an example, in closing this morning, Joseph. I want you to take your Bible out, and I want you to turn to Genesis chapter 39. Joseph's faith in God was tested by a woman who fell in love with the young man. And it came to pass, beginning in verse 7, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all this to my hand. And there's no one greater in this house than I. Nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work that none of the men of the house were inside. Then she called him by the garment saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside that she called to the men of the house and spoke to them saying, see, he has brought this, he brought into us this Hebrew to mock us. He came to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, he left his garment with me, and he fled, and he went outside. So she kept his garment until her husband, until his master came home. She spoke to him with words like this, saying, this Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came to me to mock me. So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and he fled. So it was when his master heard these words which his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did this to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, in the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Now let's put situation ethics in Joseph's case. Why is Joseph in Potiphar's house? Number one, he's there because his brothers, who were jealous of him, sold him into slavery and then told his father that he was dead. And so his father thinks he's dead. He's been separated from his family for now, at this time, probably about 7 years. And when he's in Ishmael, the Ishmaelites sell him to Potiphar, who is an Egyptian, and he realizes that God is with him, and everything that he gives Joseph responsibility over, he prospers in. And so he's doing very well. He's the second in command at Potiphar's house, and his wife begins to notice that Joseph is a good-looking young man. And she wants him to commit adultery with him. Who's going to know? He shouldn't be there to begin with. He was there because his brother sold him into slavery. He's not nothing evil. And it's just a woman, and it's just him, it's consenting adults. What difference does it make? And then one day, he won't do it. He said because it would be against God. Then he said it would be against his master, who's entrusted him to everything he owns except her, because she belongs to him. He understands that. And every day she's pressing him. And he rejects her on every turn. And then there comes a day when nobody's in the house except him and her. Come lie with me. Why not apply situational ethics here? Who's going to know? Nobody's there. Nobody can see. No witnesses. Just between her and him. Anyway, he's a young man. His hormones are going crazy. Here's this beautiful woman. She wants to be with him. And I shouldn't be here anyway. So what difference does it make? God's left me. He hasn't been with me. Look at all that I suffered. I'm just going to go ahead and do this because it's really not wrong because of the situation I'm in. You know, today, people would tell Joseph, you're right. Go ahead and do that. Nothing wrong with that. You two consenting adults. If she wants to be with you, then go for it. But he wouldn't do it. He not only wouldn't do it, he ran away when she tried to force the issue. What did he get for it? He spent 2 years in prison. 2 years. Could you say it would have been easier to commit the act than to go to prison for 2 years? Let's use situation ethics. If Joseph would have succumbed to Potiphar's wife's seduction, would God have overlooked it? Would God have said, well, Joseph, you were in a bad situation. You really didn't have any options. And you're a young boy, and you're going through these changes in your life. It's really not your fault. You see, we can rationalize this a lot of ways, couldn't we? But you know what? Joseph didn't take that out. Joseph determined to stay faithful to God even when it didn't go well for him, when he stood for what was right. You know what? I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm not proud to say this, that have come to me that have made a mistake in a sexual relationship, and they've come in with me and they've said things like, I don't know how it happened. They give me this thing. Well, you know, my wife, she died. You know, I don't love her anymore. She's not affectionate. She doesn't pay any attention to me. And see, they're trying to rationalize and justify the behavior. But God says it's wrong. It's sin. And no rationalization will change what God says. That's simple. And if Joseph were to succumb to Potiphar's wife's seduction, he would have been guilty of sin. And the situation didn't change the fact. And ladies and gentlemen, situation doesn't change what God calls sin is sin. And any rationalization, any justification, any reasoning you want to use does not change God's true. That's the way that it is. Now, I know men don't like it, and I know men will try to get around it, but God determines what's right and what's wrong. And ladies and gentlemen, if this nation does not come to grips with that fact of truth, there is no telling what direction this nation will go. Because when you begin to take God out of the equation, it is nothing but a downward slide into destruction. And if you don't believe me, take a good look at history. Men like Hitler, men like Stalin, men like Saddam Hussein. Take God out of the equation. Where does the right or wrong end? Please take your songbooks out and turn to song that Brother Mal has selected. You know what? God just doesn't determine morals. He determines the right or wrong in everything. Even in the realm of salvation, God determines what's right and what's wrong. God determines what men need to do in order to obey the gospel and what they need to do. Man, God's word says that you have to hear Romans 10:17. You got to believe John 8:24 and repent Acts 2:38 and to confess Acts 8:37 and submit to baptism and contact the blood of Christ Romans 6:1-7 and to be faithful unto death Revelation 2:10. And to be faithful to the responsibilities that God's given us, 1 Corinthians 15:58. And God determines that's what is needed for the alien sinner and for the child of God who goes astray. Now, in our society, men have rationalized a lot of these steps to justify that they don't need to do them. But if men determine what's right instead of God, then they're okay. But if by chance God is the one that determines that, then in order to be accepted by God, you must do what God requires. And you know what? God left this choice to every man and woman to make for themselves. Whether they're going to accept God's standard or they're going to accept something less. And we have the right and the ability to accept something less. But there's just one catch. When you do that, you have to accept all the consequences and the repercussions that come with rebelling against God and going against Him. You can't do wrong and get right results. It does not work. To do right is to get right results. To do wrong is to get wrong results. And if we can help you in any way, we bid you to come forward as together we stand. As we say.